This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, April the 19th, 2013. Hello and a very warm welcome to this special edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. It's a special edition this week because we have great pleasure in welcoming Steve Brine, Member of Parliament for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Steve, thank you, and we're very glad to have you here in what must have been a really busy week for
Hello, you. Hello, yes, thank you for having me.
How has it been for you this week?
Remarkable week. On top of all the usual things, just the life in Parliament, it's obviously been the funeral of Lady Thatcher this week. And whatever your views of Lady Thatcher, it was a huge privilege to be invited to St Paul's to the funeral. And you really did feel that you were walking through the pages of a history book. And just the hymns were marvellous, and the address was marvellous. And there was this lovely moment at the end when the coffin was carried out of St Paul's. The sun came out, and I was sitting right under the dome, which a long way from the front door of St Paul's, and the crowd burst into a spontaneous applause as the coffin was taken out, and this wave of applause came right the way down through the cathedral and made everybody's hairs stand up on the back of their neck. And it was a wonderful moment of release almost after the tenseness of the funeral. Surely. But it was a huge honour to be there.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. An awesome occasion in an awesome
really
building.
Was.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that. And we just go on to introduce our own readers for today. And we have Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter. And we'll get on with what's on for you. Now, starting off now with music and concerts in the time we have. At the Anvil in Basingstoke, there's a show called the Solid Silver 60s Show. And that's on Thursday, April the 25th at 7:45. You can book tickets for that in their box office, which is 01256 844 244. And again, that number, 01256 844 244. And more music for you on Sunday, the 25th to the 28th of April. This is the Winchester Chamber Music Festival, not to be missed, I think. The London Brit Ensemble celebrates the sixth festival with 4 days of chamber music and song. Tickets can be obtained from the Winchester Discovery Centre. That number is 01962 873 603. 01962 873 603. More music. The Saturday, the 27th of April, the City of Southampton Orchestra in Romsey Abbey. And that starts at 7:30 with the works of Dvořák, Bruch and Sibelius. Tickets are £18 and £15 and £10 concession. Telephone number is Romsey, 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. And the last of the musical contributions for you this morning is on Saturday again, April the 27th, and it's Verdi's Requiem. Winchester Cathedral this time, and it's the Southampton Philharmonic Choir and the New London Sinfonia. I can personally recommend this. We always go and listen to their concerts. The tickets are £10 to £32 from the box office number, which is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Open Gardens this week, a new one for us on Tuesday, the 25th of April, is The Vine at Sherborne St John. They have a mix of garden areas, including an 18th century landscape, Edwardian style summer house garden, vegetables grown by gardeners from the charity Thrive. And that's on, as I say, the 25th of April from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. Admission is £7.50, and there are plants for sale. On stage and in the theatre, the Plaza Romdi. For one performance only, it's The Pirates of Penzance. That's Friday, April the 26th at 7:30. And you will know that's Gilbert and Sullivan, of course. Tickets are £16 with concessions of £14. The number to ring again is Romsey, 01794 512 987. 01794 512 987. And at the Mayflower is the Full Monty. And that's going from Monday to Saturday, the 22nd of April to the 27th of April, 7:30. And there are matinees on Thursday and Saturday. So that's the Full Monty at the Mayflower in Southampton. Box office number 02380711811. Our own Winchester Theatre Royal. Rutherford and Son, directed by Jonathan Miller. It's on Tuesday, the 30th of April, to Saturday, the 4th of May, starts at 8 o'clock, with matinees on Thursday and Saturday. And items of other interest are a fashion show. In fact, we have two fashion shows. Wednesday, the 24th of April, To Wear or Not to Wear. And that's at Winchester Rugby Club, Hilliers Way, Winchester. Starts at 7:30 and it is in aid of Age UK. Tickets are £12, but you get a glass of wine for that. And the telephone number here is 01962 871 725. And then I'd like to give you advance notice of a fashion show which the Chesil Theatre Winchester is having to raise funds for their development of appeal. This is on the 30th of May, begins at 7:45. There will be music by the King Edward VI's flute trio. The fee of £12.50 includes canapés and wine. And it is to be an entertaining evening of fashion from the Clothesline Agency, plus a display of wonderful costumes from the Chesil Wardrobe, which are for sale. There'll be more about that in another edition. There's your What's On. And now we get to lighting up time. On Friday, the 19th of April, that's today, the sun came up at 06:03 a.m. and will set at 8:09 p.m. On Wednesday, the 24th of April, lighting time will end at 5:53 a.m. and begins at 8:17 p.m. Now, if you know of anyone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That number again, 01962 862 826. And you know that if you want to skip any particular item on this recording, you can just press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move on to another track. And now we're on to main headlines. They are this week All Aboard for the Theatre, Pay to See the City's Bonfire Night Show, Leaders Pledge on Stanmore Homes, and Illegal Demolition Won't Stop the Scheme. And we have Claire, please, with the first headline story, and that will be followed by Steve, who will be giving you the Bonfire Night story. Thanks very much, Claire.
All Aboard for the Theatre. Some theatre shows can take your breath away, but they rarely take you from Alresford to Medstead amid smoke, pouring rain and the sound of train whistles. That's what the audience enjoyed within a unique youth theatre event on the Watercress line. Ghost Trains was performed last Saturday by around 15 7 to 11-year-olds on the steam railway in moving carriages and on the platforms and waiting rooms at Ropley and Medstead stations. The children, mostly from local villages along the line, had been rehearsing the show for several days and performed before an audience of around 50 people. The event was a first-time collaboration between the Watercress Line and Gotcha Productions, with funding from Hampshire County Council. Helena Fox of Gotcha, who wrote the play, said, "The whole week has been brilliant. The kids had a great time, a fantastic educational experience, exploring the heritage. The volunteers on the line have been amazing and supportive." The play focused on the true story of Daniel Holland, a 13-year-old boy who worked and died on the railway in 1865. He was played by 11-year-old Matthew Williams. It was directed by Noel Jones of Discarded Nut Theatre, and Miss Fox said she hoped to do more site-specific work in the future. And there's a lovely picture of the children who were involved.
To see City's Bonfire Night show, safety concerns prompt admission fee. Bonfire Night revellers will have to pay an entry fee for the first time to attend this year's popular Winchester fireworks event. Organisers Winchester Roundtable made the announcement of the launch event at Abbey House on Tuesday evening, citing safety concerns as a main reason. Traditionally, people attending have to put money in buckets at the end or bought a programme beforehand from Roundtable members going door to door across Winchester. The event has been running for 54 years and takes place at River Park, which holds a capacity of 21,500 people. But Honorary Secretary John Rees said crowds regularly exceed this figure and that organisers need more control over attendance to ensure health and safety. He said, "Our crowd sizes are going up and our income is going down as we have to pay more to put it through safety measures. We spent £38,000 last year, which is the bare minimum we can get away with. Last year, we also had to bring in three extra bridges to get people across streams. Another issue is people want to come to our event but do not seem to want to donate towards putting the event on and contributing to our charities. So our key principles for getting ticketed are to get crowd control, costs and crowd size in order but to keep the spirit of the event alive. The procession is vital and will remain free. People want to come to the event because of the quality of the fireworks, not because it's free." Bonfire Vice Chairman Roger Jones added, "We want this to be an event for local people to enjoy and not feel like it is commercialised. Tickets will be in wristband form and cost £3 per person in advance or £10 for a family ticket for up to five people. Residents will be notified of the changes through programmes distributed door to door." Mr Rees added, "There was little risk to customers buying tickets in advance as the event would not be cancelled unless there was extremely bad weather." Winchester Mayor Frank Pearson supported the new measures. He said, "Last year there was 20 minutes of fireworks where usually at these events you get 1 minute. It doesn't come cheap and they have to take safety seriously." But former Mayor Dominic Hiscock, the ward councillor, said whilst he understood the thinking, he warned there could be problems on the night. "I'm concerned how people will know beforehand. I'm not sure what reaction on the gate will be when they're told they have to pay. I've been stewarding the last couple of years and there have been a huge number of people arriving by train and in cars from outside Winchester. Some advertising needs to be done beforehand. Round Table is also looking for business partners to sponsorship and help sell tickets. Last year's event raised £32,000, of which more than £20,000 has been given to causes like the Royal Hampshire County Hospital's Magic Wand Appeal, the Refurbish the Children's Ward, Children's Charity the Joe Glover Trust, and Winchester Friends of the Family."
Leaders pledge on Stanmore Homes. No homes will be bulldozed on a Winchester council estate without the consent of owners or tenants, city council chiefs have pledged. The council is currently consulting the public on a scheme to remodel Stanmore, which could see 49 homes knocked down to make way for 413 new houses and flats over the next decade. Allotments at Kingsley Place and Prince's Place, parts of Summers Close and Cromwell Road recreation grounds, and most garage blocks could also be turned into affordable housing, consultants Broadway Mallian has suggested. Tory council leader Keith Wood said, "I want to reassure Stanmore residents, no council house will be demolished without the agreement of the occupiers, and in the case of privately owned houses, there is no question of the council using compulsory purchase orders. The pledge comes after the Hampshire Chronicle reported last week how people were shocked to find their homes have been earmarked for demolition. The council sent letters to council tenants, but not to owner-occupiers, before the start of the consultation, warning them their houses could be affected by the proposals. But they only found out about the risk of demolition when they attended a public exhibition at the Carroll Centre, looked at drawings and questioned the consultants. Those upset at the possible loss of their home included a 49-year-old council tenant and his severely ill wife, living in Sherborne Place, where four houses are proposed for demolition. The council spent £15,000 hiring the consultants to develop a long-term plan to regenerate the estate, which is among the third most deprived areas in the country. Other proposals include a new leisure and sports centre on the former New Queen's Head site, revamped play areas, and better footpaths. Councillor Wood said, "The purpose is to see how we can improve the lives of residents, which clearly will not be served by demolishing their houses against their will. We've already heard concerns that residents want more housing at Stanmore so that their children and others with local connections can live there." The council chief said consultants had identified areas for consideration, but no decisions would be made until a full report was received. He added, "Any proposal that might require the demolition of a house, were it to be accepted, would be discussed privately with the occupant before it is taken further."
Illegal demolition won't stop scheme. Winchester City Council has approved a planning application for new homes, despite the developer illegally demolishing a Victorian house. Bargate Homes applied for retrospective permission to demolish Chestnut Mead in Kingsgate Street and replace it with new dwellings. The large detached house, former student bedsits, vacant since 2006, is being rebuilt as a four-bedroom home, also incorporating three flats, while a three-bed and a four-bed house are also being built on site. A planning committee earlier this month heard the developer initially bought the site in February 2012 with a view to renovating the building in line with existing planning permission granted in 2011. But the building was removed last November, and as it was in a conservation area, demolition is technically a criminal offence. Bargate Managing Director Angus Cook said the company had no choice but to demolish the home after finding several structural faults when beginning the conversion, including weak walls, rotten timber, and crumbling brickwork. He said, "Safety is of paramount importance to us, and unstable brickwork cannot be left up. When you start picking it apart, you keep going and going until you reach a point where you have something stable to work with, but this continued to spiral downwards." Council Conservation Officer Alison Davidson backed the developer and said, "Demolition was necessary, although Bargate should have gone through the proper channels." She said, "The fabric of the building had deteriorated to the point where it had become unstable. It's inevitable officers would have supported demolition on grounds of safety." The committee heard neighbours informed the council of the demolition rather than Bargate, and Mr. Cook admitted the company should have kept the council informed. Tim Phillips of St. Cross Road, speaking for a group of objecting residents, said, "Locals are strongly opposed and angry at the loss of the building and the flagrant disregard of planning laws by Bargate. Failure by the council to take action would set an undesirable precedent to other developers that they can ignore the law. But councillors unanimously approved the new buildings and praised their design, but reluctantly accepted the retrospective demolition."
And thank you, everyone, for giving us those headline stories. And now we move on with the death notices, and they'll be followed by Claire's reading of Christian comment, and then letters to the editor, historical items, your say, chronicle comment, and first person. So thanks very much, Claire, if you would take us with the death notices first.
The first one is Bryant, Wendy Bryant, suddenly on 13th April, aged 83.
Burgeon, Roger Stephen Francis Burgeon, formerly of Winchester, died in Canada after a long illness, aged 71.
Collins, Alma Beryl Collins, on 28th of March, aged 90.
Cranmer, John Avery Cranmer, peacefully on the 9th of April, aged 79.
Fowler, Charmian Ruth, ne Romanis, Fowler, peacefully on 11th April, aged 90.
Goring, Doris Goring, peacefully on 5th of April, aged 93.
Harris, Eileen Doris Harris, peacefully on 14th of April, aged 96.
North, Marie Lorraine, ne Stonehill, North, on the 10th of April, after a long illness.
Rawson, Stephen Slim Rawson, Hampshire Constabulary Police Officer, on 3rd April, whilst in the course of his duties, aged 40.
White, Olivia Maud White, peacefully on 9th of April, aged 68.
Wood, Kathleen Kate Wood, on 5th of April, after long illness, aged 78.
And Claire with Christian comment, please.
This is headed Breakfast by the Shore of Galilee and is written by Mary Gray. In John's version of the Easter story, the followers of Jesus again find themselves by the shores of Galilee where the story began. Now, invited by Jesus to breakfast, with a fire already burning on the shore, ready to cook the newly caught fish, they are both afraid and overjoyed. We hear this story again when in Britain and when in Europe we are emerging from the longest, coldest winter that many of us can remember. The story warms our own hearts as it appeals to the memory that one of the key features of Jesus' earthly ministry was feeding people. The Last Supper and gift of Eucharist were a culminating moment of a life focused on a concern that people would be fed. Think of the picnics in the open, when he fed 5,000 with loaves and fishes, meals where he ignored religious taboos by breaking bread with sinners, and the time he allowed his hungry followers to flout the law of the Sabbath by picking ears of wheat while walking through the fields. The apostles encounter him post-Easter by the shore, where this concern is still central. The risen Jesus in his glorified state can still share a meal with them and be aware of their physical needs. But this hospitality is accompanied by a call to renewed discipleship. Feed my lambs, he commands Peter. What the picnic by the shore offers to the group who had lost all hope at Golgotha is identity renewed. And that is precisely the same gift of renewed identity being offered to all of us today. As Rowan Williams wrote in a sermon, the risen Christ says, "In the depth of this reality, I will speak, I will be present, and I will transform." Today's context is one where concern for food is no less central. After a year of rain and floods, a long winter when floods refuse to subside and the ground is still saturated, many farmers here are deeply worried about this year's crops, and indeed we have begun to import wheat. The situation is at crisis level, with both floods and drought in many poorer parts of the world. Does the risen Christ, aware of the need for people to be fed, especially in these poorest parts of the world, summon his followers to action in this new context of climate change? CAFOD, Christian Aid, and 150 charities are responding with a campaign, Hungry for Change, aware that the food system is failing the poorest people and the balance of power is tipped towards global companies. This is the appeal addressed to all from the Galilean shores. Feed my sheep. And that was written by Mary Gray.
Now we're going to move on to letters to the editor. We have 8 letters this week, and Steve's going to start us off with these. Thank you.
Thank you. Allotments add to the community, this one is headed. Sir, during discussions on the Stanmore planning framework, it was suggested there are plenty of unused or partially used allotments in Stanmore, which could be developed for housing with little impact on current allotment holders. In fact, of 146 plots in Stanmore administered by Winchester New Allotment Holders Society, only 2 are unlet, and these because they have only recently been vacated and are being prepared by volunteers for reletting on the waiting list. One is in Prince's Place, a site taken over from the council in October 2012 in a poor state of cultivation. It has now been greatly improved by volunteer labour during the winter, and 2 unused plots have already been let. It is true, 1 or 2 are not as well looked after as others, but those neglecting their plots are urged to improve or give up, and if all else fails, are evicted. This has resulted in a marked improvement in the appearance and productivity of Stanmore allotments. Some believe that the council's responsibility to provide new homes overrides everything, and to this end should only build on fully functioning allotment sites despite the protestations of allotment holders, many of whom have cultivated and loved their plots for years. Such people should at least have the honesty to say so, rather than pretend there are lots of unused plots available. The truth is, there are no unwanted allotments. There is a need for more allotments, and it is a demonstrable fact that allotments contribute markedly to the community of Stanmore. And that's from David Barber, Winchester New Allotment Holder Society, St James's Lane in Winchester.
This letter comes from Judith Martin and is headed The Real Legacy of Margaret Thatcher. What a deeply depressing lineup of interviewees in Your Say in the Chronicle April the 11th. On Margaret Thatcher, hero or villain. 2 young people who have clearly absorbed without questioning all that the right-wing media ever said about her, and 2 older people with almost no political engagement. Winchester was better protected than most from her vindictive and philistine acts. But even here, there were collections for miners during the strike of 1984-5, which so defined her rule and set the seal on the loss of the UK industrial base. The young organist in the lineup, who thinks Thatcher was definitely a hero, presumably benefited from a private or church-based education. There are not many organ lessons in the state system, and Thatcher's 1988 Education Reform Act brought in the ability to charge for music lessons. Being Winchester, probably fewer children lost out. But compare that philosophy with the brilliant El Sistema, the free music lessons for underprivileged children pioneered in Venezuela. The Simón Bolívar Orchestra, made up of Sistema students, performed triumphantly at the proms more than once. Young people might reflect that so many of the council houses she insisted were sold are now student lets in Stanmore. And the receipts from council house sales could not be used for building. As for the idea that Thatcher was an icon for many women, having broken through the glass ceiling, she swiftly pulled the ladder up. She only ever appointed 1 woman to the cabinet and was no feminist. On the day I write this, the Financial Times leads with "Prosperity gap widens as welfare cuts hit North hard." That is Thatcher's real legacy. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
A contrary view is taken by John Airey of Winchester under the heading Strong, Honest and Principled. I am not surprised by the tributes pouring in for Baroness Thatcher. She was strong, honest and principled. Something I fear is lacking in our lying, wishy-washy politicians of today from all parties. She offered unparalleled guidance as a leader. Compare this to the Liberals, led formerly by a Scottish alcoholic, then by someone like a corpse in Mingus Campbell. They then had a potential leader who paid for sex with rent boys, then by a current leader so weak he makes Neil Kinnock look good. Last, they had another power-mad potential leader in Chris Hoone, now in prison, and it certainly says something about the Labour Party, who now admit they got it wrong last time. When Tony Blair and Peter Mandelson both pay tribute, it says it all. R.I.P. Lady Thatcher. John Airey, North Walls, Winchester.
Population policies are long-term solutions needing a global strategy. Sir, I applaud Richard Stobart, letters April the 11th, having also been among the audience at the INTEC lecture by Dr. James Dyke, who presented a grim scenario. The world's sustainable population, given human needs, is 2.5 billion. Indeed, the lecturer, when asked this, said that that could be regarded as a reasonable proposition. Population issues were not addressed. So we are living in a world of 7 billion people, projected to be 9.2 billion by 2050, with an alleged need to double food production, an approaching humanitarian crisis, scarcity of fresh water, energy, land use, and man-induced climate change. And this, along with a melting Arctic, catastrophically overfished, acidifying seas, and a fifth, human-caused mass extinction. Population policies are not about short-term or compulsion. They are long-term solutions, needing a concerted global strategy, voluntary methods and funding, public debate, public education, and full-scale participation by public, politicians, media, institutions, local authorities, and mainstream environmental campaigners, FOE, WinACC, Barton Farm campaigners, and all. I would urge and beg all those listed above to come to the Jonathan Porritt meeting at the Bapsey Hall, Winchester Guildhall, next Monday, April 22nd, 7 p.m, and at least hear what he has to say. Rosemary Conway, Westleigh Close, Winchester.
This letter is headed Time to Canonise Alfred the Great. Sir, reports of the exhumation in Winchester of bones, which may be those of King Alfred the Great, draws attention to this Anglo-Saxon king, which is rightly deserved. By all accounts, he was a good man who brought many benefits to his subjects. By organising the first translation of the Bible into English, he encouraged the widening of the Christian faith, and for this he has a very important spiritual legacy. In medieval times, good kings and queens were often canonised, e.g. St. Edward the Confessor and St. Wenceslas. For Alfred the Great, canonisation is long overdue. May I encourage the Roman Catholic Church to start the process? And that's from J.R. Chisholm of Arthur Road, Hyde in Winchester.
Royal Hampshire County Hospital parking will get even worse, says E. Young. I recently had to attend the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for an appointment with a specialist, but nowhere could I find a parking space among those provided. There was a queue of 6 cars at the main parking area, and time was getting on. In the end, I had to park at Hillier's, although I know they don't like it, understandably, and did buy flowers to hopefully compensate. But what else could I do? Could someone tell me how we are going to provide for the 2,000-plus people soon to buy new homes in Winchester? E. Young, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And Vera Bruti of Winchester says reasons for original refusal still stand. In 2011, I came by chance across a letter to Winchester City Council from a consulting company written on behalf of 2 large developers regarding the draft infrastructure study. I still have a copy, and it troubles me now as much as it did then. It referred to the refusal by the city in 2010 of Carla Holmes' planning application for Barton Farm. One reason for the refusal was the inadequacy of the realigned Andover Road to safely and satisfactorily accommodate the type and amount of traffic generated by the proposal, and because it has not been demonstrated the strategic road network is capable of operating satisfactorily with the additional traffic likely to be generated by the site proposals, particularly in relation to Junction 9 of the M3. I could not believe my eyes when I read that the land director of Carla said at the Barton Farm Forum that he was convinced rerouting the road is the right thing to do based on long, hard thinking over several months. The only member of the public in favour of the proposals said the same, that the plans for the diversion were well thought out and well considered. However, most other people were unconvinced. Surely the plans to divert a main road through a new development should already have gone through the most stringent procedures by planners, surveyors, and the Highways Agency to demonstrate that every problem can be eliminated. Only if this has been done can the public be reassured the realigned road would operate satisfactorily and the additional traffic likely to be generated so that it will be safe and convenient for the public to use as pedestrians, cyclists, and children going to school. We need to be sure it is the right solution based on the evidence, not on hard thinking over several months by a director of Carla Holmes. Vera Bruti, Manningford Close, Winchester.
We already have a leisure centre. That's the heading for this letter. Sir, Peter Spellman's support for a costly new leisure centre at Bar End, letters April the 11th, is predictable, but lopsided. He cites the rising number of young athletes in Winchester and District AC, but one can't believe that they all come streaming down the M3. What's the pollution balance between those who save petrol and those who use more by travelling further from the other side of the city? What's the pollution increase caused by car journeys required by those from the city centre who would need to drive or bus to Bar End? One has the feeling the main motivation for an Olympic standard 3-pool centre and international quality running tracks is to give everyone the impression that they can go for gold at a world level. That's ridiculous. Most users of recreation centres want basic swimming, gym, squash and games facilities, accommodation for small children and infants, and a decent place to eat. But none of that costs £30 million. And we have a very fine leisure centre already. B. Taylor, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Thank you, and that finishes our letters to the editor for this week. You may have something you want to write to the editor about, and you can do that by contacting the Hampshire Chronicle on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news, lowercase of course, at Hampshire Chronicle, all one word, .co.uk. That's news at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. You can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. SO23 8AL. Now we move on to historical items. This is my favourite bit. I'm a little bit worried that I might start remembering 100 years ago, but it's only too far away from me just now. We're going to start off with Steve with 200 years. Don't make me know what this is about.
I definitely don't remember this. So 200 years ago from the files, 1813, believe it or not, no mails having arrived, there is still no news of the declaration of Austria against France. It is rumoured she had demanded of France the restoration of the Tyrol, the port of Trieste, and a portion of the former territories of Austria in Italy, and that Bonaparte, having returned an evasive answer, the cabinet of Vienna immediately determined on making common cause with Russia. And the second item from 200 years ago in the Hampshire Chronicle, the public indignation against Sir John and Lady Douglas is now at its height. After the presentation of the Bristol Address, which the Princess of Wales received in the most private manner, the populace paraded about Greenwich and Blackheath in a chair, carrying on men's shoulders after the manner of Guy Fawkes in Westminster, amidst hisses and groans, a figure gaily dressed up named Lady. We understand it was again to be carried about yesterday, after which it was to be publicly burnt.
100 years ago, 1913. Leonard Parmiter, a young man, was summoned before the city bench for cruelty to a cat. The summons had been issued by Inspector Jones of the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Esther Seawood of Cannon Street stated that on Sunday, the 6th instant, there were two cats on a wall in her garden. She saw someone throw half a brick at one. It was not the defendant. She did not see him do anything. Case dismissed. And another item. At London Sessions on Monday, a daring theft was alleged to have been committed by Egerton Philbrick, 40, of Stratford. His wife Mary, 34, was charged with him in stealing silver and gold articles valued at £40 from Philbrick's uncle, Mr. Walter Jones. She was acquitted by direction of Mr. Alan Laurie, who remarked that when a married woman committed a felony in presence of her husband, she was assumed to be under his coercion and entitled to acquittal.
50 years ago, 1963. Hampshire Education Authority is puzzled by another discrepancy between the performances of boys and girls in the 11-plus examination. A year ago, the results showed 230 more girls than boys had qualified for grammar schools. The trend continued, although not in such a dramatic fashion. Following the figures, the results of exams since 1964 have been checked, but there was no reason for the discrepancy. And the second item, I fear it has not occurred to most folk in charge of the young to warn them that they may find birds' nests with one or more stone-cold eggs in them. These have not been deserted, but are the first of the clutch the hen has laid, usually one a day, until she has the number she wants to sit on. Two bobber-job enthusiasts, tidying up my garden, found a pheasant's nest with three cold eggs. These they brought me to ask if they could keep them, as the nest was deserted. Alas, it was too late to retrieve the damage.
25 years ago, 1988. The dean and chapter at the cathedral fear that unless drastic measures are taken, the C-15th archway at the entrance to the close will be irreparably damaged by thoughtless drivers. Only last week, a large boulder from the essential framework was knocked out by an undetected vehicle, and although this has been temporarily repaired, it is the sort of damage which will cause the structure to collapse if it is allowed to continue. And the next paragraph. Winchester's City Council's elections on May the 5th promised to be the most intriguing in years. Just over a third of the 55 seats fall vacant, giving voters the chance to tip the balance in favour of the once all-powerful Conservatives or the new Social and Liberal Democrats. Tories lost control last year for the first time since 1974. The astonishing rise of what used to be the Liberal SDP alliance from 5 seats in 1984 to 23 last year resulted in a hung council.
And next we have, Hampshire Chronicle's own Vox Pop column, which is, I think, dealing with the bonfire night charges, is it, Steve?
Indeed, and it's their Your Say column. And this week it says, we asked, what's your view on paying an entry fee to the Winchester bonfire night event? And there are four people who give their view. Mike Dias, who's 37, director of Borough Hill Place in Bishopstoke in Eastleigh, said, I think it will be a bad thing and it will affect attendance. You will have to organise yourself to buy a ticket. And I think people like the fact you could turn up and give a donation if you enjoyed it. Emily White, who's 35, self-employed of Compton Way in Oliver's Battery, said, it seems all right to me, as you would be paying to see a great show. It's always really good, and I expect the organisers get round everyone, with their donation buckets, so I guess it's a good thing for the charities. Sarah Wood, 35, is a full-time mum of Wren Close in Badger Farm, and she said, I have never actually been to it, but one of the reasons is because I have young children, and I hear they get very big crowds. So if they need to bring in tickets for safety reasons, then it might make things better. And finally, Stephen Parker, 46, chartered surveyor of Fifield Way in Littleton, said, I guess they're looking to increase the money for their charities. I don't think £3 is unreasonable for entry. It might put some people off going, but you have to remember, it's for charity and is always a very good night out.
Thank you very much. And appropriately, editorial comment this week deals with that very issue. It's headed, A Small Price to Pay for a Great Night Out. In many ways, Winchester's Bonfire Night has become a victim of its own success. Year on year, attendance figures grow as word spreads about just how good it is. That's down in no small part to the dedicated members of Winchester Roundtable who organise it, and the army of volunteers they recruit to ensure the night goes with a bang. But now, for the first time this year, the tablers will charge an entry fee for admission. They say the growing numbers bring with them increasing concerns about safety, which, of course, has to be a priority at such a popular event. But it's also a shame that not enough people put hands in their pockets to show their appreciation by donating to the collecting buckets on the night. Putting on this event doesn't come cheap. Last night, the tablers spent £38,000 to stage it, and it's only after this money has been allocated that they can donate funds left over to local good causes. Whilst some won't welcome the charge, and that tickets will largely be available in advance of the night, we feel that £3 is a small price to pay and will ensure all those attending will not only have a great night out in safety, but that more money will be donated to local charities. And now we've got Robin, who has first person for us, please.
First person this week is by Khalid Aziz, with the title We Shall Not See Her Like Again. Just 3 weeks ago, Channel 4 called me up, anticipating Baroness Thatcher's demise. Could we come and talk to you about the Thatcher years? It's a funny old question, as Mrs. T might have said, but it got me looking through the telescope of three decades. Just what was it like? To answer that question with any accuracy, you have to go back earlier than her election as Britain's first woman Prime Minister. The 1970s were a time of even greater austerity than today. Inflation was rampant, peaking at 26%. Strikes had left bodies unburied, gravediggers down shovels. Rubbish was piling up, the bin men were out, out, out. And of course, there were the miners. I was a callow TV reporter when Mrs. T came to power in 1979. Based in Yorkshire, I witnessed the rising tide of militancy led by Arthur Scargill. Not an ungenial man to have a drink with, but transformed into his demonic TV image once the cameras were trained upon him. At the BBC, we were castigated for covering Scargill's every pronouncement. I explained to pained viewers at a Meet the BBC event, "The trouble is, when Arthur Scargill catches a cold, the rest of the country gets double pneumonia." In the end, Mrs. T proved more than a match for King Arthur. By June 1982, I was ensconced at the top of a Gosport tower block, commentating live for ITV on the homecoming of the victorious Falklands flotilla. On HMS Hermes was the PM, who'd sent the task force there. Years later, I got to know my Hampshire near neighbour, the redoubtable Sir Henry Leach, the senior naval officer who had persuaded Mrs. Thatcher that such a bold enterprise could indeed be pulled off. He confided in some detail what a close-run thing it had been. That victory assured her second term when she took on and beat the unions. Channel 4 wanted to know what it was like to be an immigrant and start a business in the Thatcher years. Looking back, I realise just how much easier it was in 1983 than it is today. Was she racist? Not at all. I recalled her marvellous speech in 2003 when we were raising money for the Commonwealth Memorial Gates on Constitution Hill. She paid genuine and generous tribute to the millions of Commonwealth volunteers in the two world wars. Enoch Powell famously opined, "All political careers end in failure." That was certainly true for Mrs. T, but her leaving of office came only after her legacy was assured. Trying to explain the difference she made to my children has been challenging. You had to be there. She cured our reputation as the sick man of Europe, and set in stone the political direction of travel for decades. Love her or loathe her, we shall not see her like again.
Thank you very much, Robin, and that was the last of the regular features that were chosen for you by our editors this week. Now we're going to move on to items of general news. Claire's going to start us off, as usual. Thank you.
And this is one about Dougal, who's to toast a special 18th. It all started as a bit of banter over a few pints of not very good ale. Simon Brown and Clive Mansell met at a christening in Botley, at which they were joint godfathers. A discussion sprang up over how their drinks were not particularly good. They agreed that their new godson, Dougal Rhodes, should be able to grow up and toast his 18th birthday with something better than they were sipping. It's the sort of conversation that often happens in pubs up and down the country, and usually ends there. But Simon was an entrepreneur who happened to own an industrial unit, that would be ideal to house a brewery. And Clive was a publican, now based in Winchester, and less than a year later, the pair had set up Itchen Valley Brewery and were making their award-winning ale, Godfathers. That was in 1997. Fast forward 16 years, and Itchen Valley Brewery is a local success story. It has seen a change of ownership, although Simon still has some involvement as he owns the premises. And now he is preparing to help Dugald celebrate his 18th birthday in October by enjoying a glass of the ale that his birth was responsible for creating. Simon said, "It's quite unnerving that so much time has passed, but it's exciting too. If I was a 17-year-old lad and knew that I was largely responsible for starting a brewery, I'd rather like that. It's kudos." Dougald first learnt about Godfathers and Itchen Valley Brewery when he was around 7 and was given a pump clip with the name and logo on. Since then, he has tried some sips of the ale and is looking forward to enjoying it properly once he's 18. And in the meantime, he has enjoyed impressing his friends by telling them about his award-winning ale. "It's pretty cool," says the 17-year-old. "It's very unusual. Not many people have a beer named in their honour. My friends are quite impressed by it." Dougald was delighted that the brewery gave him some Godfathers to auction off to help raise money for a trip to Africa this summer, where he will be helping deprived children. And he's looking forward to making Godfathers his regular drink once he turns 18. "I've tried a bit, and it's nice, but I can really enjoy it when I turn 18. I will definitely drink it. It's part of who I am." And there's a picture of him and Simon Brown celebrating.
And the next story, we're going to go to Alsford. It's headlined, "Hope to Break Deadlock Over Pitches." Deadlock over new rugby pitches in Alsford is continuing, a meeting has heard. Hopes for the new facilities have been in jeopardy after Alsford Rugby Club said land bought for the project was too small. The club must start building work at Albury Park before the end of June or lose funding towards the £167,000 scheme from Sport England and the Rugby Football Union. But much is unclear, including the stance of local landowner Rodney Morgan-Giles to extra land being leased to the club. "Grants from Sport England and the RFU are conditional on there being two pitches," said Town Councillor Jonathan Reid. Councillor Reid, chairman of the Recreation Committee, told the council last Thursday, "We need a number of pieces to come together. All rely on the first piece moving, and no one is prepared to be the first piece to move." He was due to meet the rugby club this week to discuss the crisis.
Health chiefs to decide on new super hospital. Plans for a new specialist emergency hospital in Hampshire are moving forward. The Board of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals, is due to consider the business case later this month. The proposed shake-up will then be scrutinised by councillors on Hampshire County Council's Health Overview and Scrutiny Committee in July. The Trust, which serves 600,000 people, has not yet found a suitable site to build the new multi-million pound critical care facility. Managers have been looking near Mitchell-Dever in an area of land encircled by the M3, A34 and A303. It will be only the second emergency hospital in the country, with the first, in Northumbria, still being built. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of HHFT, said the aim was to have the new hospital up and running by 2017-18. She said a small emergency centre in the middle of the patch was the safest way to treat the sickest 15% of patients, as they would have access to consultants 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But the majority of hospital care would remain in Winchester and Basingstoke, including maternity. More outpatient services will also be provided in community locations, for example, Eastleigh. Controversy has surrounded the proposals, with suggestions consultant-led maternity care could move to the new emergency hospital, leaving Winchester and Basingstoke with midwife-led centres for straightforward births only. Asked how the Trust could afford to build a new hospital, Ms. Edwards said it would borrow the money at a low rate of interest from the NHS. She said, "Our board would never sign up unless they were convinced the Trust can be solvent." After the meeting, a Trust spokesman confirmed consultancy-led maternity care would remain at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital under the proposals. Meanwhile, the HHFT's project to create a new cancer treatment centre has taken a step forward, with a team of designers assigned to create a multi-million pound building with the wow factor. A design team from architects BDP have been appointed by HHFT to develop their submission of a hospital without corridors, due to open in 2016, on the same site as the new emergency hospital. Their design, which beat off competition from 35 other architect-led teams vying for the chance to create the centre as part of a Europe-wide competition, features plenty of light, open spaces and a large courtyard, all designed to keep stress to a minimum for cancer patients. Merv Rees, HHFT consultant and clinical director of surgery, said, "It wasn't an easy decision to make. The six shortlisted designs we were considering all looked fantastic. But in the end, it was the fact that BDP were designing the centre around the patient that helped us to make the decision. We want people to walk into the building and just say, wow." HHFT will be responsible for providing £13 million of the total figure and are likely to finance the scheme through a Foundation Trust finance facility. The remaining £5 million will be raised through fundraising, donations, and the generosity of the public.
Delivery lorries ruin town's ambience. Lorries delivering to supermarkets are ruining Bishop's Waltham's cafe culture, it has been claimed. The town's parish councillors say residents are unhappy that deliveries to the co-ops on the High Street and St George's Square are damaging the town's ambience. Councillor Rona Pickering said, "I'm hearing from parishioners that Bishop's Waltham has a great cafe culture, except in the daytime during the week when it's blocked up with co-op deliveries." She said that both co-ops have separate deliveries and urged a parish council meeting last week to ask co-op to limit deliveries to before 7 a.m. and to merge them. Councillor Terry Wilson responded, "We have tried them before, but the response has been so minimal as to be almost insignificant." But Councillor Steve Miller, who is also chairman of the town's Chamber of Trade, said, "They already have deliveries in the morning, but they have them in the day and in the evening as well. That's because we, the people of Bishop's Waltham, are buying so much." A spokesman for Southern Cooperative, which runs both stores, said, "Southern Cooperative's convenience store presence in village locations like Bishop's Waltham is particularly valued by customers, for whom getting further afield to shop can be difficult. Unfortunately, this can mean that in some locations, deliveries are made in less than ideal conditions."
Share your memories of house fire and restoration. The National Trust is appealing for people's memories of a blaze that nearly destroyed a Hampshire stately home in 1960. Hinton Ampner House, near Alsford, is marking the 50th anniversary of its restoration in 1963. The National Trust, which is hosting a vintage weekend garden party in May to commemorate its rise from the ashes, is appealing for help to tell this chapter in its history. Louise Washington, Hinton Ampner's visitor experience officer, said, "A major part of the garden party weekend will be the unveiling of a new exhibition recounting people's personal recollections and experiences of the fire. The history books record the blaze in detail, but we would like to tell the story of the people involved in the fire and the subsequent restoration of the house. Those people were the true heroes, and many of their stories will have gone unwritten. But without them, the house could not have been restored to its former glory. This is where we need help from the public." She would like to hear from anyone who has memories of the blaze, no matter how big or small a part they played in it. They may be firemen, builders, craftsmen, or local residents. Photographs would also be very welcome. We've already recorded some wonderful audio stories for the exhibition, but it would be great to add to the collection. We'd love people to get involved, said Louise. Hinton Ampner was the home of Ralph Dutton, the 8th Lord Sherborne, who died in 1986. The house was ravaged by fire in 1960, and restoration took 3 years. In 1963, Lord Sherborne invited local residents and those involved in the fire and the restoration to a garden party to celebrate the newly restored interiors. Visitors to this year's 1960s themed garden party on May 25th to the 27th will see parts of the house presented as if the builders are just putting the final touches to the rooms. There will be 1960s music, vintage vehicles, a children's design competition, a chance to peek behind a fake bookcase to glimpse hidden fire-blackened brickwork, and to see the drawing room's original fire-damaged Georgian chandelier. On May the 25th, everyone is invited to bring a picnic to soak up the party atmosphere. Call Louise on 01962 771 305 or email louise.washington@nationaltrust.org.uk with your memories. And with this article, there's pictures of the fire, the people, and Hinton and Ampner House as it is today.
Civic chiefs look at railway options is next. Winchester civic chiefs are taking the first steps in what could be a multi-million redevelopment of the area around the city railway station. The City Council has started work to look at the options with a development assessment report and is talking to landowners and Network Rail. The Chronicle has reported how the area, including several car parks stretching from Newburgh Street to Andover Road, is ripe for development. The council said development will create new jobs and improve the gateway to the city from the train station. Last month, local architect Paul Bulkley predicted national companies would be interested in relocating their headquarters to Winchester if there was a major revamp. A parking strategy has already been commissioned by the council, keen to make sure that parking, vital for commuters, is not squeezed out by any new building. Councillor Keith Wood, council leader, said, "Redevelopment of the area around the railway station represents an important and exciting opportunity for the city. We will work closely with partners and landowners to develop proposals that aim to bring new employment and an improved environment in the Andover Road area, balanced with meeting the parking needs of commuters." The announcement has been supported by local civic groups, including the City of Winchester Trust, who met on Monday to discuss the issue. Senior Trust member Michael Carden welcomed news that the council has started to look at the options for the station and its surrounding area. The Trust emphasised the need for the assessment to take a coordinated approach to public transport, including bus, walking and cycling, as well as trains. They also reminded the Council of the need to consider the wider station area and its surroundings, not just the station, and immediately adjoining land, creating mixed use. The assessment needs to promote a high-quality public realm, as well as identifying and safeguarding buildings of heritage and historical significance, it was suggested.
Duchess to mark Hospice Week at Naomi House. Royal mother-to-be, the Duchess of Cambridge, is to visit Winchester as part of a national charity campaign later this month. This is the second announcement within a week that Kate will be in Hampshire for an official visit. The Duchess will be given a tour of the Naomi House Children's Hospice in Sutton Scotney, which was first opened by her father-in-law, the Prince of Wales, in 1997. The visit will be in support of Children's Hospice Week, which is aimed at highlighting the vital work places such as Naomi House undertake in caring for children and young people with life-limiting conditions and their families. Kate, who is known to be interested in the work of the Children's Hospice movement, will meet members of the Naomi House staff, volunteers, as well as young patients. She will also join a tea party with some of Naomi House's children and their families. During the tea party, Kate will watch a musical performance by Ollie Wade from Winchester, singing his own song, Free, written in memory of his brother Ben, who died in 2011 after he and his family received end-of-life care and bereavement support at Naomi House. Ollie's song will be released at the start of Children's Hospice Week to raise money for Naomi House. Kate will also make her first visit to Southampton in June when she officially names the world's latest cruise ship, Royal Princess.
Lou loves to chill out. Lou Walker is one tough cookie. To train for a charity channel swim in September, she leaves her Swarrison home and heads for the sea every Sunday, with no wetsuit to protect her from the near-freezing water. The aim is to build tolerance to cold water, and Lou, 50, a sports massage therapist, grabs every cold water training opportunity. Unable to get to the sea in the recent bad weather, the next best thing was for Lou to don her swimsuit and do some snow angels in her garden, and she's planning a dip in the River Itchen. The Channel Swim will be a relay under strict Channel Swimming Association rules, with no wetsuits. She hopes to raise £10,000 for Home Start Winchester and the Friends of Hampshire County Youth Orchestra. She said, "The hardest bit is the cold water. Getting in is hard enough with the cold shock response, but your skin then burns for the next 15 minutes. When you get out, you have about 7 minutes before you start to shiver uncontrollably as the cold blood from your extremities trickles back into your core, a really vile sensation. So aspects of winter swimming are definitely uncomfortable, but once you've warmed up, you feel amazingly good."
Teeing off golf in Georgia. An Alsford company has helped to build the very first golf course in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. Huxley Golf, based in the Dean, has laid an all-weather surface green on a three-hole course. Paul Huxley, director of Huxley Golf, said, "It's excellent news that Georgia has its first golf course, and I'm delighted that Huxley Golf could play a major role in helping to make this happen. Spreading the game of golf globally is something that is important for the future of the game, and I hope that Huxley Golf's world-class facilities will continue to contribute to the development of golf in Georgia and beyond."
And the next story is hotly contested meaty contest. Talented butchers savoured the sweet taste of success at the Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition 2013. The heat was on at the Holiday Inn in Winchester as producers prepared their finest sausages, pies, bacon, meatballs, faggots, black puddings and ready meals. A panel of judges weighed up 170 mouth-watering entries for 12 hotly contested categories. In the sausages section, judges marked 16 varieties for their appearance, consistency, texture, taste and smell. The annual event was organised by County Food Group Hampshire Fair and sponsored by Lucas Ingredients, meat industry distributors Dalziel and the British Pig Executive, and feature a new Hampshire charcuterie category. Martin Martindale from Andover-based Greenfield Pork Products was crowned the Supreme Sausage Champion for 2013. Hampshire Fair Chairman Michael Wright said, "I am delighted by the number of entries and range of variety. It demonstrates the skills of local food producers and how popular their produce is." And the picture is judges Dennis Elliott and Stephen Sweeting of Fuller's holding their sausages, so to speak.
Vegetarians look the other way.
Flying Sylvia, 89, raises £6,000 for Parkinson's. Winchester pensioner Sylvia Stops has spoken of her thrill at her first skydive at the age of 89. Miss Stops from Twyford has raised some £6,000 for Parkinson's UK after the jump from 14,000 feet over Salisbury Plain. She said, "It was brilliant. We were lucky with the weather. The sun shone. When I jumped, it was fabulous. We were nervous, but as you come out, there was the tremendous noise of wind rushing past. But you do not feel as if you are falling. It only lasted 45 seconds, but when the chute opens, the view is fabulous. It took about 2 more minutes to land. I can't say I enjoyed the free fall part." Miss Stops, a retired physiotherapist, said the skydive appealed more than a charity walk. "I wouldn't mind doing it again, but probably not, as I wouldn't get the support if I did it again. It's been a fabulous one-off. I recommend it to anyone." To support Miss Stops, visit www.justgiving.com/Sylvia Stops, all one word. To find out about Parkinson's support, contact the chairman of the Winchester branch of the Parkinson's Society, Myra Clare, on 01962 883921. And there are some lovely pictures of Sylvia before and during her flight and landing on Salisbury Plain.
It's time to celebrate Towns Street Market. Alsford is set to have a new public clock to help celebrate the 800th anniversary of the Towns Street Market. New Alsford Town Trust member Roy Gentry said the Trust is proposing to put the clock on the former post office in West Street. The Art Deco-style timepiece, 2 feet by 3 feet in size, has the approval in principle of the building's owner and would also need listed building consent. King John is reputed to have granted Alsford the right to hold a market, the year before the barons forced him to sign the Magna Carta.
And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Thank you very much, everyone. Just another reminder quickly that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recordings. I'll give you the number again. That's 01962 862 826. 862 826. Our editors this week were Irene Dowding and Bill Argos, to whom we say a very warm thanks. And thanks also to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you to our readers Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Bye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And a very warm thank you to Steve Brine for joining us today and giving us something a little bit different.
Thank you
this
for asking
week.
Me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you all very much. And from me, Roz. Thank you. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week and thank you for listening.